Empty words and vacuous rituals have no place in the house of the God of Israel. We who aspire to follow the example of the Kohen must also gaze in the mirror as we attempt to forge our relationship with God, for to do less is to engage in tragic self-duplicity. Welcome to 10-Minute Mitzvah, Episode 79, Raising and Elevating the Hands. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
F. E. Smith was Winston Churchill's best friend in the first part of the 20th century and a renowned British barrister. According to one anecdote that I believe I saw online, Smith was once representing a bus driver who was being sued by a plaintiff claiming that after an accident, he, the plaintiff, was unable to properly elevate his arm. Under interrogation in court, Smith asked the plaintiff something to the effect of, "After the accident, to what extent are you able to raise your hand at this present moment?" And the plaintiff, seemingly overcome with pain, was apparently unable to raise his arm at all. And then Smith asked, "And to what extent were you able to elevate your arm prior to the accident?" And, utterly thoughtlessly, the dishonest plaintiff held his arm high. Whether or not this is true, it is a fitting anecdote for our mitzvah of the day, for what may seem to be only about cleanliness of hands and feet is ultimately about elevation, not only of arms, but of our very selves. Let us see how this is so. One of the mitzvot in the Torah pertains to the priestly prior preparations upon entry into the sanctuary for service. The vessel involved in this ritual is called the kior, or basin. Moses is commanded in Exodus, "V'asita kior nechoshet," you shall make a basin of bronze. And we are further informed in Exodus 30, verse 19, "V'rachatzu Aaron uvanav mimenu et yidehem ve'et raglehem," that Aaron and his sons will wash their hands and feet as they are about to minister before the Almighty. Why the obligation, and why a basin of bronze? As to the original inquiry, the medieval anonymous work Sefer HaChinuch, Book of Education, describes this normative requirement as prioritizing cleanliness, or, as he puts it, and this is the Sefaria expanded translation, "From the roots of the commandment is the fixed foundation that we have said, that it is to aggrandize the glory of the temple and all of the activities that are done there. And therefore it is fitting to clean the hands, which are the things that are involved in the work at all times when the priests are touching the contents of the temple. And from this root they, may their memory be blessed, said," this means the sages, "that the priest does not need to sanctify his hands between one service and another service, but rather once during the morning, and he may then serve the whole day and the whole night," end quote. This interpretation is theologically and exegetically entirely within the realm of reason, and yet we may suggest something further. To wash one's hands and feet inside the sanctuary is to engage in an act of sanctification and elevation, and to reflect upon the very arms and legs that are being profoundly purified. And here, the story of F.E. Smith and the dishonest plaintiff is entirely relevant. For the civic laws of Exodus contain a case that is known in Jewish law as shlichut yad, rightly translated as extension of the hand in a dishonest form. The scriptural passage pertains to a shomer, a custodian, who is charged with guarding an object and utilizes it dishonestly for another purpose. For example, a cleaner's that is committed to storing a garment, and the owner of said cleaners instead wears the garment at a party, is considered by the Bible to have inappropriately sent one's hand toward the object of one's fellow. It is not only someone exposed before a British barrister who can unjustly and dishonestly seek to elevate an arm. The very law about the extension of the hand, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once suggested, actually teaches us all about our lives and elevating them. For in the end, Rabbi Soloveitchik reflected, we are all custodians of our very bodies and souls. They belong to God. And if we misuse what has been entrusted to us, that is an act of extending our hands toward our own selves in a way that undoes the deal between the Almighty owner of our lives and we who have been committed to act as custodians. If this is the case, then to sanctify one's hands is to remind oneself that they, as well as our very lives, are given by God's grace, and that they, as well as the feet with which we walk, are meant to be designated in sacred service for all of us in the way we live our lives, but especially for a priest preparing to minister before Almighty God. To wash one's hands and feet, to sanctify one's hands and feet, is to ponder one's self, one's destiny, one's responsibility. And this brings us to the bronze basin called the Kior. It was created, according to the end of Exodus, out of the mirrors of the Israelite women, a gift by these women toward the tabernacle, the dwelling place of the divine. One must imagine, then, a priest preparing for the morning rituals, washing his hands and feet, and seeing his own reflection as he sanctifies himself. Rabbi Michael Hatton reflected on this symbolic scriptural significance. He wrote, quote, "Significantly, though, that ritual washing is effected through the instrument of the Kior, a burnished and gleaming vessel that stands as a sentinel in the Mishkan's courtyard." So Rabbi Hatton writes, referring to the Mishkan or tabernacle. And then he continues, "In other words, as the Kohen is about to sanctify his hands and feet, he is confronted by a reflection, not of the world around, but of himself." And he then adds, a bit later, "In the pagan conception of serving the gods, the rituals themselves become the vehicles for securing their bounty or averting their wrath. The recitation of formulas and the performance by rote of ceremonial acts is, in the pagan view, enough. It is just that sort of shallow and superficial spirituality that the Kior comes to dispel. Not by formal and institutionalized acts alone does one approach the deity, but rather through the heartfelt desire to transform oneself, confronted by his own reflection as he prepares to enter the house. Unable to avoid the glaring image of his own being and who he is, the Kohen is to internalize the idea that it is only through his spiritual transformation that his service will gain acceptance. Empty words and vacuous rituals have no place in the house of the God of Israel. We who aspire to follow the example of the Kohen must also gaze in the mirror as we attempt to forge our relationship with God, for to do less is to engage in tragic self-duplicity. Only by recognizing our true selves and who we are can we aspire to higher spiritual achievements," end quote. This, I think, is wisely put. Effie Smith, in another well-known anecdote that I believe I also saw online, was supposedly in front of a judge arguing a case, and the judge suddenly said something to the effect of, "I have been listening to you speak about this case for some time, and yet I am no wiser than I was at the beginning." And Smith is said to have replied, "Perhaps not, my lord, but you are better informed." We are custodians of our lives, and all of us, and especially Kohanim, priests ministering before God, must see our hands and our feet as instruments for divine service. For ultimately, as custodians, we will be called to judgment before the all-wise judge that matters most. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.